So non-medical switching is when your doctor prescribes a medication and the insurance company says, oh, well, there's this lower cost medication that kind of does the same thing. So we're not going to cover that. We're going to put you on this other therapy. And you know, it can really, really mess with you. So that is another access barrier, is non-medical switching.
Fighting off migraine attacks is hard enough, but fighting with your insurance company for coverage of the therapies you need just exacerbates that pain. Costly treatments like some of the new neuromodulation devices, CGRP therapies, and alternative treatments like acupuncture, supplements, and massage are often denied. And the secret, says our next guest, is knowing how to navigate the healthcare marketplace to get the care you and your doctor believe you deserve. Katie Golden is a leading migraine patient advocate, blogger, and speaker. After chronic migraine interrupted her promising career as a banker, Katie became a professional patient on disability, struggling to get her mounting healthcare expenses covered without the security of a job and good health insurance. Author of hundreds of articles on her own blog, Golden Grain and Migraine.com, Katie also serves on the steering committee of CHAMP, the Coalition of Headache and Migraine Patients, which is a leading advocacy organization. Katie Golden, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you, Paul, so much. I've been watching for years, and I'm really honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Terrific. Well, we've got lots to talk about. Migraine is a pretty expensive disease, isn't it?
Absolutely. I have calculated what it costs for me on a daily basis, actually. My health insurance expenses last year were $100,000. That's without insurance coverage. So then I look at my personal, what my out-of-pocket expenses were for the year. And it was $15,000 that came out of my pocket that insurance didn't cover. That's $1,250 a month, which equals about $41 a day. I have migraine disease and it costs me $41 a day to have this disease and try to manage it.
That's more than a lot of people spend on food.
Yeah, it's not a Starbucks. It's not like you can cut back on Starbucks and it'll help.
So people who are episodic obviously are not spending quite as much as you have spent being chronic.
True.
And so we don't want to alarm people that everyone's going to be spending $41 a day.
Yes, absolutely.
But counting the cost is a healthy thing to do. Many people with migraine have no idea how much they spend on prevention, treating migraine each year, let alone the cost of those lost days of work and wages that they can't capture, you know. So as a former banker, you did the math and you found out what it was costing you. Why is it important for someone to know their migraine expenses?
It's so important to know your migraine expenses because you need to be able to forecast how your money is being spent. I mean, you can, people have budgets that they use, you know, in regular everyday budgeting for groceries, budgeting for school supplies for their kids, or you've got to have a budget in there for medical expenses. And really having a true grip on it, and it's not just insurance costs, it's also what alternative treatments that you use. So if you go to yoga classes, how much is that? If you go to acupuncture, which is usually not covered by insurance, how much does that cost? You have to take all of those things into account because at the end of the day, at the end of the month, you know, your paycheck only goes so far.
And if you work in an hourly job and you have to leave halfway through the day and take that time off and you don't get paid for that, you've got to add that cost to it, right? The cost of going to the emergency room and your copay on that. These are all things that add up, right?
Absolutely. I found myself when I was working and I was episodic that I had to save my vacation days for when I needed them for migraine. I didn't use them to go on vacations. I just had to build up a bank. And, that's something that's very real that has to happen.
That's kind of a hidden cost. It's not calculated when most people do the math. But if somebody wanted to calculate their own cost of migraine, how would you recommend they start?
It's a little bit of a tedious process. And because I am very numbers focused and numbers driven, that to start off, I keep every single receipt. I keep all of the explanation of benefits that you receive from your insurance company, and you know, massages that I get. Unfortunately, I have a folder of receipts that I keep, and so you know, going through those and putting them into different piles. It's really hard to have a chronic condition or even episodic and be very organized and to keep all of that, but it is so important for so many different reasons. And to your point about work, I mean, just figure out what your hourly rate is that you get paid and include that. You know, when you're not at work, you're losing that money too. So that's a huge cost.
And the cost of emergency room visits can also be significant, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you don't know, you need to know what your cost is when you go to visit the emergency room. Depends on your insurance. If you have a deductible of, you know, $500, or there's a copay of, you know, $50 per visit, what your deductible is, all of these things in going to the emergency room, it's very difficult to navigate that system, but it's something that you need to know.
So you mentioned before that there are some good reasons for knowing what your true migraine cost is. And one of those is trying to choose the right insurance and the right plan, right? So let's talk about that a bit, and practically filing claims. Something people in the U.S. have to do in terms of filing claims, and other countries with a national healthcare system do not. But finding the right insurance policy and knowing how to leverage it is a big decision factor for people with migraine, especially more so as it becomes chronic. So what should we look for in a plan?
The reason you want to have all of those receipts and to keep a kind of an ongoing tabs on what you're spending, that will help you in figuring out what type of insurance plan that you need. For me, I need the Cadillac plan that covers everything, that I can go to see. You know, I could see a doctor on the East Coast, I can see a doctor on the West Coast, and I can go, you know, out of network, and it's costly. However, I would rather pay more per month for the best plan so that I have the ability to see who I want, instead of choosing a lower plan, maybe not the Cadillac plan, maybe like the Chevy Nova kind of plan, or the Kia plan, that you might not have to pay very much per month, but one hospital visit, one ER visit, you may have to spend. The bill that comes to you could be $6,000. And I don't have $6,000 laying around that I can just pay this bill. So if you're on the Affordable Care Act in the US, it actually is fairly easy to compare plans if your state does participate in the Affordable Care Act. And you can choose a bronze, silver, and gold levels, and you can see side-by-side comparisons of those plans, what your true costs would be. And they give examples of different areas, saying having a baby. Okay, well, if you did this plan, this is your prenatal costs and delivery cost, you know, delivery and stay costs, and then they do that for every single plan, and so you can easily look and try to compare those.
So one of the reasons why this is such an important topic for people with migraine is that we tend to try a lot of different things for our healthcare, like alternative therapies that aren't often included in insurance plans, or more expensive second-line therapies that we may want to try if we fail the first-line therapy, like for preventives. So can you talk about how to evaluate plans for those things?
Sure. A lot of complementary and alternative methods that we like to use that I believe we all need to use, those who have migraine. Medication is not the only answer. There is some power and strength inside of you that you can utilize to try and manage your migraine disease. And so for me, it's getting massages. It's going to yoga classes. It's could be acupuncture. And those things aren't covered by insurance for the most part. And so those are additional costs that you have to factor in. So even when you're looking at an insurance plan, you still need to think about those other costs.
So it's pretty rare to find those in an insurance plan. But you can also look at, if you're a person that needs to see a specialist who might be out of state or out of network for you,
right.
That's a really important consideration, right?
Oh, that's huge. And so when you're looking at a new insurance plan, they usually have tools where you can find a doctor. So, you know, if there's somebody in particular you want to see or have seen in the past, before you choose the plan, go on their website and see if they are in network or out of network, or nope, not going to cover you at all. And there will be different levels of how much the insurance company will cover for that visit. So if they're in network, you usually don't have, when you walk into the door of the doctor's office, your copay is probably, you know, minor, but if you're out of network, could be a lot higher. And then, of course, there's the, nope, we don't cover you at all.
But you found it to be worth it personally to go and see doctors who are out of network to actually travel. Do you also consider your travel expenses as a medical expense associated with migraine?
I do. And the reason that I do is because all of the medical expenses, the number of, you know, my out-of-pocket $15,000 a year does include my travel. It does include my alternative methods that I use. And the reason I keep all of that is because you can deduct them on your taxes.
Ooh, okay, hold that thought. I want to come back to taxes. So let's go back to claims. To increase the chances of our claims being reimbursed, what do we need to do as patients?
What's really difficult is that as patients, we have to prove how sick we are. And that's not fun. And it's not fair. But unfortunately, that's what we have to do. So record keeping is very important.
To get those claims covered, yeah. So are there little hacks that you use? Like is there a digital diary that you use that has been helpful? Or do you once a month sit down and go through all your phone logs and see how many times you called, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield or whatever your company is?
Right. Yes. and I have... it's actually mind-blowing in realizing how much time I have spent on the phone in a week or in a month or in a year, how much time I've spent on the phone trying to get something resolved. And you have to be persistent. And when you're sick, you're not feeling well, whether you're episodic or chronic, that's so hard to do, but staying on top of it, be the squeaky wheel. Don't just take their answer or whatever they're telling you. There's steps that you can take, and it's a very tedious process. I have an Excel spreadsheet that I use, and
of course you do.
Yeah, because I love Excel spreadsheets. but noting not just the time that you spent, but the answers you were given, and the time frame and the next steps that have to happen. Am I getting a form? Do I need to fill a form out? Do I need to contact my doctor? Is there, what can I do to speed up this process?
So can you give us an example of a migraine-related health expense that you filed for that isn't often covered?
Yes. My headache specialist at one point a few years ago said, I don't know what else to do for you, so I'm going to send you to another headache specialist who does an inpatient program where you're there for 5 days, 24/7, getting a good cocktail of different medications to try to reduce the severity and frequency of your migraine attacks. And it took a year for me to get that approved. That was a huge, huge fight. And at that time, I really felt like I had tried everything. You know, and I really trusted my headache specialist. And if she said I should, you know, I was at that point where she was running out of options, I really, really wanted to try this. And so I kept at it and I kept at it and I kept at it. And it also required my communication with my doctor's office. When you're denied a claim, you need their help too. So you need your records. You need, again, to prove how sick you are. You need to have a list of medications that you have tried and that have failed you, that just didn't work. You have to have a list of, how many times have you been to the ER? How many times, how many different medications have you been on? And so, again, that took a year. It was a year-long process, and now that I've had it approved, going forward, I've not had any issue. And I'm glad that I stuck with it because it is something that is very big in my toolbox in doing that inpatient stay.
So it sounds like there were three factors that I heard that you were leveraging in order to get that claim approved. One, you were very tenacious. Two, you kept really good records in a diary that you could prove how many times you'd been to the ER and failed treatments. And number three, you had a great relationship with your doctor's office so that they could prove medical necessity to the company, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And so sometimes when you get denied, appealing that denial, you really do need their help, your doctor's office. You need their help in doing that, and because you need to gather all of that information. And so I personally, if I'm trying to get something approved and I've gotten denied, I will ask for the doctor's notes, all of my records, and I keep a copy. And then I'll send a copy, to the insurance company. And because many times it can get lost in the system, your doctor's office is like, I sent that to your insurance company. Your insurance company is probably some huge, conglomerate that you have no idea where it went, and they'll be searching around. But if you have your own copy on hand, it's easier to be able to have that. And so I have a box of my medical records. I weighed it recently, and my box of medical records weighs about 40 pounds.
That's okay. So is there any value, in your opinion, to filing a claim for something that you're pretty sure is going to be denied, and collectively for all of us to be filing those claims that we're pretty sure are going to be denied?
That is such a great question, and I think that really links to advocacy. Because even if you think that it's still going to be denied, the more people who appeal or file appeals, for denials. The more people that do it, they're gonna realize, your insurance company is gonna realize that this is a problem. And maybe it's something that we need to reevaluate. So, you know, it may not help you in that very moment, but you could be helping in the greater good.
So it's kind of like paying it forward.
Exactly.
From what you've seen, do insurance companies come in and reevaluate periodically how they're treating a disease?
Insurance companies usually look at their formulary list maybe once or twice a year. A formulary is their list of medications and treatments that they will cover. And within those formularies, there are tiers. So depending on what medication you have been prescribed, it falls into a tier. So you may be paying high cost, higher copay for a medication that is new to the market versus a medication that is now generic and has been on the market for 10, 15 years. So again, they typically look at that once, maybe twice a year. However, one insurance barrier, access barrier is insurance companies can out of nowhere just decide to change their formulary.
In the middle of the year?
Yes.
Without telling you?
Yes.
And you discover it at the pharmacy counter?
Absolutely.
So fun. I've been there. Yes.
Been there. And it's like, wait, I've been on this medication with this insurance company approving it for so many years. And it's something that I use. It's in my toolbox. I know that I need it. And then all of a sudden, middle of the year, you're like, what do you mean you're not going to cover this? It's not fair.
It's not fair. I once had a family reunion ruined because they switched the medication. I had no time to appeal, had to take the new medication on the trip, and was sicker than a dog for 4 days. So, not fun.
Non-medical switching.
Right.
So non-medical switching is when your doctor prescribes a medication and the insurance company says, there's this lower cost medication that kind of does the same thing. So we're not going to cover that. We're going to put you on this other therapy. And, it can really, really mess with you. So that is another access barrier, is non-medical switching.
So you talked about non-medical switching. You talked about different tiers in the plan. Can you tell people what step therapy is?
Sure. Step therapy, I really like to call fail first. So let's just say your doctor prescribed a CGRP inhibitor drug. And your insurance company says, no, we're not paying for that because we want you to go through different steps and try different medications and treatments and prove that those don't work.
Like a beta blocker or topiramate or something like that.
Yeah.
That's lower cost, mm-hmm, before we're going to give you the expensive stuff.
They may say, your doctor can just write a physician attestation, as in you don't have to provide all of those records that you have tried and gone through these things. And your doctor just says, yes, we've tried this and this is what they need. And so that is a blessing. But another hurdle, it could be that they make you start all over again. When you already know something didn't work, but in their mind, they want you, maybe it's something you tried 5 years ago and had horrible side effects. And they could say, we're not going to cover this new medication until you go back, try this other treatment again, and fail that. And then maybe you have to fail a second one. And that's putting your body at risk. And I think, that's insurance companies really look at their bottom line. They don't want to pay for the medication or the treatment. They want you to try all the other things that are less costly. But to humanize it, You know, what they don't look at and understand is like, that could really, really mess with my health.
Right. If you're for 6 months trying other steps before you get to the real thing, you can lose a lot of productivity and a lot of life.
Absolutely.
While you're going through that, not to mention the expense of it. So let's say your chronic migraine is so frequent that you're considering filing for short or long-term disability. What do you do about your insurance then?
So I think, first of all, if you're thinking about short-term or long-term disability, one, again, you need to be on the same page with your doctor because they are going to be the best person to help advocate for with you in doing that process. And then you really need to look at your benefits that you have through your company. In my case, my company offered long-term disability, but did not offer short-term disability. And so my doctor had suggested, you know, we tried a lot of things, and so maybe you just need a break. It wasn't about the job, it was just your brain needs a break. And I had to go out and buy my own policy to cover short-term disability.
You couldn't use FMLA?
I did use FMLA. So the Family Medical Leave Act allows 12 weeks for an employee to be out of work to either take care of themselves or a spouse or family member. However, you don't get paid when you're on FMLA.
But you do on disability.
Yes. So that's another thing to consider. It is, and if you use FMLA, those 12 weeks do not have to, they can be intermittent. They don't have to be consecutive.
2 weeks and then 2 months later, another 2 weeks.
Right. Yes, exactly.
So tell us, you know, why do insurance companies deny claims so often? Is it ignorance or cruelty or cost control? If you look at this equation from their side, what do you think, how do you think they're evaluating it?
Insurance companies care about the bottom line. There are wonderful physicians. There are, you know, wonderful, I don't want to make it sound like insurance companies are completely evil, but honestly, they're a business. And so in a business, they need to really protect their bottom line, and they are for profit. So in being able to, you know, think ahead and forecast ahead, you know, they're really looking at their bottom line. And so I really think that the multiple insurance access barriers that they that they throw out there are so that they don't have to pay.
Well, we know that one of the issues that many people will face this year is this layered coverage, where in many other disease states, you might need more than one preventive therapy or daily therapy in order to manage your case. But we expect that there will be some pushback and some denial for people who might have used a CGRP plus Botox or a CGRP plus a device, right? Are there... Obviously, you talked before about just go ahead and apply because we need that log of denied claims collectively for advocacy. But are there any organizations that provide case management services that help patients that are caught in this dilemma?
Yes. This whole process of being a figuring out insurance, figuring out coverage, being denied, it's so complicated. It's so complicated, and it can be really overwhelming. And what's wonderful is that there's a really great organization, the Patient Advocate Foundation, patientadvocate.org. They've been around for 20 plus years, and they just recently started a program. It's called Migraine Matters. So I currently am fighting with my insurance company about the use of Botox and CGRP at the same time. And I'm using them I will get a case manager who works with me personally on my issue and is the intermediary between me and the insurance company. And it is so incredibly helpful, because otherwise you're kind of out there in the ether not knowing like what's gonna stick and what's gonna work. And they have this experience and they've done it in other disease states. And so that's a really, really huge resource, the Patient Advocate Foundation.
That is really cool. And I know people are gonna want a link to that, so we'll add that below your talk. So for someone who's had a really expensive year of treatments, are there any tax deductions that are possible?
When you're filing your taxes for 2019, if your medical expenses are 10% more than your adjusted gross income, you can deduct them, which means that you'll owe the IRS less money, or depending on what your adjusted gross income is, then they might owe you money. So it's kind of a pain, but again, like, I keep all receipts, all records, even if I keep the parking lot. You know, when I go to the doctor's office, it's $12 to park. Like, it's an expense. Yeah. And so, yeah, you can deduct that. And I've actually shared that with a friend who had a different illness, and she refiled her taxes and she got a very large rebate. So,
yeah, and health savings accounts can help people as well. There's so much more that we could talk about if we had time, and I bet that the people will have many more questions that they can ask underneath your talk, and you can engage with them and help them navigate to some of those answers. So, Katie, where can we learn more about you and the important work that you're doing?
Sure. I kind of wear many hats, and so I would say my blog is goldengrain.com. Golden is my last name, and grain as in my grain. So there's an E at the end. And I will do a better job of keeping up with everything. But then I also do write for migraine.com, and then CHAMP, the Coalition for Headache and Migraine Patients, is a very, very valuable resource as it collects info from so many organizations that we're all working together to help people with these access issues.
Absolutely. So that's headachemigraine.org for CHAMP, right?
Yes.
Great. Well, we'll add that below your talk as well so people can find it. And thank you so much for joining us on the Migraine World Summit.
Thanks.